When I was in grammar school, my mother signed me and my three siblings up for swimming lessons. So, the beginning of those lessons, which happened, of course, in the summer, we got up, it seemed awfully early, and we walked up the hill, just up the street, to the town swimming pool, which was not far from our house. And the beginning of those lessons involved just being in that shallow end and getting wet and learning the dog paddle. It was pretty manageable. But then came the time that we had to jump off the wall into the deep end. And not only did we have to jump into that deep water, but we then had to swim, again using the dog paddle, out to a rope that had buoys on it. And we were supposed to swim out to that and swim back. And let me tell you, it was miles away. I was petrified, but the first time jumped in and I started swimming, and all was going well until the midway point. And then I thought, what am I doing? And I started to sink. Now, thanks be to God, there were teenage aides in the water and they lifted me up and prevented me from drowning, so I stand here today. But several times that happened. I got to that midway point and I lost my confidence. And then I started to sink into the water. But finally, I made it to those ropes. I made it back. And in a few years, I was doing laps the length of the pool. But in the beginning, it was frightening. That deep water, the distance of that rope, and just believing that I could actually make it there and back. So I have some sympathy with Peter in today's gospel. Peter, who, as we heard, asked Jesus to let him walk on water just as Jesus did. And Jesus says, come, and Peter comes, but loses his nerve. This whole story comes in Matthew's gospel just after the feeding of the 5,000, when Jesus has been with a great crowd of people. And Jesus dismisses the crowds, takes the disciples in the boat, and gets away. And then Jesus leaves the disciples in that boat, and he himself goes up a mountain alone to pray. While he is praying on that mountain, the boat is being battered by wave and by wind, and it's very far out from the land. So early in the morning, Jesus walks on that water towards the boat, which terrifies the disciples. Not only is there this wind and wave, but there is this figure coming to them on the surface of the water. They're afraid that Jesus is actually a ghost. But of course, Jesus says, don't be afraid. It is I. And that's when Peter says, well, if it's you, and I can't tell exactly what he means by that. It almost sounds like a challenge if that's really you. But he says, if it's you, command me to come to you. And so he says, come. And Peter walks on the water until he notices the strong wind, and that's when he loses his nerve, and that's when he sinks. So Peter, when he's sinking, is again terrified and shouts, save me! And Jesus reaches out his hand and saves him. And then they get in the boat, and the wind ceases. And then we're told that the disciples realize who Jesus is, and they worship him. And they say, truly, you are the Son of God. This is one of those moments in Matthew's gospel where the disciples have a small glimpse of who Jesus is. They often don't understand. And they won't understand fully till after his death and resurrection. But in that moment, they understand Jesus as the Son of God. Now, I have to say that for some people in this modern age, maybe even some of you here, there can be questions about this story. Questions including, did it really happen? It can be a struggle for some of us to imagine the laws of nature being suspended. That there can be an event that's so outside our experience and maybe even what we allow as the realm of possibility. But to Matthew's Jewish Christians, there would be no trouble believing this story. For that is a people formed, as we indeed are, by that Exodus event. By God leading the people of Israel out of slavery in Egypt through the Red Sea. Moses standing there, parting the waters. And so for them, it's not hard to imagine through God's power, Jesus is there walking on water, having authority over even creation. So I wonder if perhaps there's a better question for us to ask as modern people than, is this historical fact or not? But maybe a question about, What does this story mean to Matthew and Matthew's community? Why is it included in the gospel? And I think there is an answer to that question, and part of that answer is what it says to us about Jesus. Matthew is showing how Jesus is that faithful shepherd of the people of God who leads the people, who cares for the people. And Jesus walks on the water not, as one commentator I read said, to show off, to say, hey, look what power I've got. Jesus walks on the water to save the people in the boat. Jesus is coming to them as they are struggling against wind and wave and being very far from the shore. So Jesus is coming to them in their need. And then Jesus invites Peter to take that literal leap of faith, to get out of the boat into the water. That Jesus is the one who calls us to take those risks of faith, to take us to new and unexpected places. And then Jesus is there when Peter doubts and sinks. So Jesus is the one who is there to save us in the midst of our doubts, in the midst of our struggles and difficulties, when we are sinking. And of course, as I read this story, Jesus accepts Peter's doubt. He doesn't chastise him for it. He asks why he was doubting, why he had so little faith. But he's right there with Peter in the midst of that, and he reaches out to grab Peter in his doubt and gets him back into safety in the boat. So I think Matthew is suggesting that Jesus is faithful in seeking out God's people, especially when the people are in need, to come to them, to rescue them, to come to us and rescue us, offering us that important lesson that faith involves risk. And it's only by God's grace do we have faith, and only by God's grace can we take that risk. And that living by faith involves as much as we can trusting the promise of God, trusting that God is with us, especially when we might be in difficulty. Peter can walk on water as long as he holds on to that trust, as long as he believes what he's doing is possible, as long as he knows that God is there to support him, even when he's doing something seemingly impossible. But it's when he takes his eyes off Jesus and looks at the threats around him, when he notices the wind and the waves, that then he doubts, he falters, his confidence wavers, and he sinks. And so this story, I think, offers an important lesson for us in what it means to be a follower of Jesus, what it is to be a disciple. In fact, some interpreters suggest that Matthew has this passage in his gospel not just to tell the story of the experience of these disciples, but for those who come after, even for us, that we can see ourselves in that boat moving through life, tossed in the stormy waters. We can see ourselves as the church, a community who is gathered but yet faces temptations and trials, and especially in Matthew's day, faces persecutions. It's interesting that throughout the passage we hear the disciples are in the boat. But I don't know if you caught the very last sentence where it says that it's not the disciples, but those who are in the boat. It changes. And some suggest that that represents Matthew's message, that the story is not just limited to the disciples in that literal boat, in that literal moment, but it's to all of us, the body of Christ, those who come many centuries after, who are traveling together and maybe in that storm-tossed boat. We are part of this story and part of this promise as well. For the reality is, to live in this world, to follow Jesus, means we can't help but know stormy seas. We can't help but experience rocky times when winds blow us off course. This is true for us as individuals. It's true for us as faith communities. And we certainly know doubts. We have fears. We live not in a situation unlike those troubled waters that Peter attempted to walk on. And we certainly have times when we may not feel up to the task. We might feel inadequate, unprepared, without what we need to face the challenge. It is in those times that Jesus says to us, come. To go out into those stormy waters, but doing so trusting on God, focusing on Jesus, not looking at what's around us threatening us, not allowing ourselves to lose our nerve, but also knowing that if we do, Jesus is there to catch us, to reach out to us, to support us, to bring us to safety. In our first lesson this morning, we have that account of Elijah. And Elijah is experiencing God's faithfulness in the midst of stormy times. In the chapter before we read from today, Elijah has an awful experience with the Queen Jezebel. For Elijah has taken it upon himself to put the prophets of Baal, the false god, to the test. They fail the test, and Elijah kills 400 prophets of Baal. Jezebel is furious with this. Those were her prophets. And so she has promised Elijah she will seek him out, hunt him down, and she will kill him. So Elijah is feeling that he is alone. He's feeling he's a failure, and he has fear. Fear at that threat. He is sure that he has lost the people of God. They've all turned away from God, and everything he has tried to do has been for naught. And so Elijah runs away. He goes 100 miles into the desert. He lies down under a broom tree, sounds a little like Jonah, and he prays to die. But God does not kill him. Instead, God comes to him not once but twice, bringing him food and water, telling him he needs to strengthen himself for the journey. And then God tells Elijah to go and stand on the mountain of God, on Mount Horeb, and there God will be present. And so Elijah goes and stands on that mountain. And then we heard, there's wind, there's fire, there's earthquake. But God is not in all of those. Instead, God is in what our translation calls the sheer sound of silence. You may also have heard it expressed as a still small voice. However it's expressed, God is present to Elijah, not in that raucous wind and earthquake and fire, but in that still quiet, in the sheer sound of silence. God then says to Elijah, go, and gives him specific tasks to do, sends him back to the vocation to which God has called him, and assures him that those who have turned from God will be punished, but that there are 7,000 who have been faithful. Elijah is not alone. And so Elijah is restored to community. So despite Elijah feeling that he has failed, fearing that he will be killed, God comes to him, and God feeds him, and is present with him, and restores him. God is faithful to Elijah and delivers him from his doubt and from his despair. And God does not chastise him. God instead renews him and sets him on the course that God desires for him, restoring him to community, to vocation, renewing him, taking away that isolation and that sense of failure. So God is present with Elijah, coming to him in that silence, that still small voice. Now we know that God can be present in those dramatic earthquakes and winds and fire. We hear it in the story of Moses on the mountain, where there is earthquake and fire. We heard last week in the Transfiguration, the cloud coming on the mountain and God's voice from the cloud. But God is also present in the stillness. And so I think it's so important that we read in today's gospel that Jesus goes off alone to pray, that Elijah goes alone to the mountain to encounter God. This reminds us of that importance of being quiet in God's presence, of allowing the stillness to restore and renew us, to in that silence listen for God's presence, to come before God in prayer, in quiet, and be. And in those times, I think, we can be made aware of God's faithfulness, how God provides all that we need to answer the call God has extended to us, that we can come to a new sense of trusting in God's loving presence and that faithfulness of God always being present with us, that we can have our faith strengthened, and that we can face the challenges and the dangers of this world, and we can dare to face and name our fears directly and focus on God and follow where God would lead. So Jesus this day, I think, is calling us to come, to dare to risk going into those stormy waters, not looking back, but confronting directly our fears and risking everything to follow Jesus in faith. And so I wonder what this day are the doubts and the fears that we face. What are those things hidden under those stormy waters of our lives? Perhaps we're afraid of the unknown, or we can't trust our ability to face new situations. Maybe we trust God's promise for abundant life, but we have our doubts. Maybe we even feel more comfortable where we are now, and it's awfully hard to risk moving to a new place. Maybe we worry we don't have what we need. Certainly I hear a lot of talk in the church about we don't have what we need to face the present, let alone the future. That can hold us back. It can limit God's call, our sense of God's vision of all that God intends for us. Maybe we have a sense of failure, of sinking into that water, or recognize that that first step can be the hardest, going off into that stormy sea. Or perhaps we struggle with how we live in this age and in this world, how we live in a nation which is so divided, how we respond to hatred and injustice around us, how we respond to events such as this weekend in Charlottesville, Virginia. Perhaps that can be very scary. Whatever it is, Jesus bids us come, promising to walk beside us, to lead us, and to catch us when we sink, assuring us that life abundant awaits if we can trust. And the one we trust is, of course, as the disciples say, the Son of God, who has power over the forces of this world and who desires to protect, to save, to lead and call us into the fullness of the divine life. Amen.